Dad?
What, Hartley?
Well, you know how you give each hen house 10 acres of pasture space so the hens can do all their natural things?
Yeah, like enjoy sunshine, eat bugs and grass, and get exercise?
Well, if you give all the pasture space to the hens, there won't be any room for Rusty and me to play.
Hartley, the Wilcox farm is over 1,800 acres. We'll always have pasture for kids and hens to enjoy.
Cool. Catch you later. Rusty's waiting. Wilcox Family Farms. Locally fresh since 1909.
Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen. It is KDO.
And Thierry Rotureau, the chef in the hat.
Thierry Rotureau, you are chef owner of a couple of restaurants. Tell us what those are.
I've got Luc, which is about 7.5 years old. It's a French-American bistro in Madison Valley, 28th and Madison. And I also have a restaurant downtown, which is a more contemporary modern brasserie at the corner of 6th and Union, bottom of the Sheraton, and it's called Lule Kitchen and Bar.
Lule, delicious. You can get the classic caviar in the soft egg.
And you can also get a nice burger.
So a nice burger.
We cover
well.
The whole spectrum.
If you're listening to our show, Seattle Kitchen, and you're used to hearing Mr. Tom Douglas, that
Who's Tom
deep,
Douglas?
Deep, sultry voice, he is not with us today. He is out on the beautiful island of Hawaii. Not sure exactly which one. He's sad he can't be here, but in his stead, we are in the Hot Stove Society, a beautiful cooking school on 4th and Virginia in the Hotel Andra, with a live, beautiful audience today. They are so excited because they know they're going to get a breakfast sandwich at some point. So we're holding them hostage until at least breakfast comes. We have a huge show today, big show. Rachel Bell, fellow Cairo host, is going to be on our show talking about Passover and explaining her Seder dinner this year.
And a James Beard nominees
That's
for
right.
a show.
Can't wait to congratulate her for her awesome show. Remind me what it's called, Terry. My Last Meal?
Your Last Meal.
I'm going to get some part of that wrong. But Your Last Meal. So congratulations to her. We can't wait to see her. More fun Passover talk with Brittany Bartolaban from the Dahlia Bakery. She's going to talk to us about baking for that particular holiday. And we're going to visit some of our favorite eats from the last week. I love that segment. Terry, do you have something in mind?
Did you eat lots of delicious things this past week? There's a new restaurant I tried last week that is in town from one of the ex-chef from Lule and Rovers.
I can't wait to hear about it.
Is that Rob Sevcik?
Yeah, Rob Sevcik. And of course, as people know and love, we'll be doing Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge.
It's going to be you and me.
Yeah, where everyone yells at us in their car like, no, that's not the answer. It's answer C.
I wonder how many people get hurt during that show. especially when they go, Baba Ganoush.
Oh, are you having a flashback to your last quiz
last
where you didn't know?
Just ridiculous.
Do you ever feel shame in that quiz? I certainly do, where I feel like I should know
something. I try to let it not hurt me. I try to let it brush right over, and you know, when you're not good, you're just not good. You know, you just have to go over that.
Well, and there's always
and you're always good at something, so you have to flash on that.
The other part of it is when you're really not good at it, you're still giving back to the community by giving something away, so you don't feel too terrible.
Talking about that, we just did a fundraiser for Food Lifeline Saturday with Tom, and raised over $500,000 with 180 people in the room.
Congratulations!
Not just the two of us, but there was a whole slew of people from the community who, you know, help raise over $500,000, which is remarkable because that's every dollar is 4 mil. So that's 2 million meals
that's
that were
amazing.
Raised on Saturday night. So that's pretty impressive.
You two always doing such great stuff for our city and those
we
in
try.
The kudos.
We have to do more because some people do nothing. So get out there and do something.
That's right. Offset for your neighbor. All right, Thierry Rotureau, it's just you and I. Are you ready to make some ordinary dishes extraordinary?
Absolutely, always.
Okay, here we go.
I'll make them French, as Tom would say.
I was going to say, is your version of extraordinary just Frenchifying everything?
No, it's just what I know. You know, that's the way I like my food.
All right.
I don't look like this because I don't eat.
Well, let's start out with some scallops. Beautiful scallops. First, let's talk about how to pick out the best kind of scallop and then what you would do to make those delicious scallops extraordinary.
So scallop is one of those items that goes bad really fast. So you need to make sure they're extremely fresh. Smell in the fishing department is not a good idea. fish in the ocean don't smell. You never seen fish swimming around like this.
They should smell like the ocean, but yes. Salty, but not fishy.
Not ammoniani, whatever the word is. So anyway, the best scallop you buy on the market are called dry pack scallop, which are the scallop that have not been soaked into a salt solution, a sodium solution. Most, so you know, on the market, most scallop have been soaked in a sodium solution because scallop swallow the water by having the salt opening it up. So it swallows the water and becomes twice as heavy. And scallop are not sold by the piece, but they're sold by the pound. Here we go. You know the whole story now.
the heavier the scallop, the more they make, essentially.
Correct. And if there is a giant pool of white liquid around your scallop, those are not dry pack scallop. Those have been soaked, and they're rendering some of that product. So try not to buy those. Try to find dry pack scallop. Go to your fishmonger and make sure you insist on that because those are the best and sweetest scallop.
And if you're not sure, just ask, right?
Yeah, and if you're not sure, just ask. And frozen dry pack is better than wet fresh.
Okay, so we've only got a couple minutes. So you've got these beautiful dry pack scallops. What are you doing?
Second most important part is to make sure that your pan is really, really hot. Scallop are full of albumin. They want to stick to the pan. If you don't make the pan hot enough, it will just stick to your pan just like an egg white would. Does that make sense? So you need to make sure your pan is really hot. Either unrub your whole scallop into a lot of olive oil if you want to, which is something I do often, or put a little fat and not butter. It's got to be something that resists high heat. Put that in your pan, drop the scallop, and don't touch it. Let it do its searing. It needs to be left alone for at least 20 to 30 seconds until that scallop has a beautiful searing. Most people want to touch it. They want to move it. Don't, because you're gonna just make it a mess. So leave it alone, and then flip the scallop on the other side, and there we go. And let it do exactly the same thing. You want to cook your scallop medium rare, tender. You don't want it to be like a piece of rubber. You want it to be tender. When you take it out of the pan, your scallop's going to keep on cooking a little bit longer. So you want to count on that.
Okay, so what are you dressing that scallop with to make it extraordinary? We've made a really great, delicious
scallop. A nice seared piece of foie gras would be the best match to that. But we're not going to go there. We're going to go somewhere else. At this time of the year, I would do beautiful asparagus grilled, and I would do fresh basil, toss the whole thing together, make a little asparagus salad to go right next to your scallop. And you'll have a wonderful seafood showcase.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, I love a little salad with my seared scallop. But you got to remember, don't overcook those scallops because they're easily going to go to the rubber country.
Is this a time, I know we only have a couple seconds here, but is this a time where maybe you would bring out the thermometer, or is it just a touch thing?
I would say yes. If you've never cooked scallop, use your meat thermometer because it's your best friend in the kitchen. You don't have to guess. You just poke to the middle, and then you'll know exactly how hot it is in there.
All right. Coming up next, Mr. Otero, you and I are going to host a dinner party using a special ingredient in every course. You're listening to Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen. It is time to have a dinner party, my favorite time of the week. This is where generally I invite you and Mr. Tom Douglas over, but it's just you and I this time.
That's right. That's okay. I can handle it.
Tom is in Hawaii, so we are taking the reins of this one. And as we like to do, we're going to use one ingredient in every single course, and it's artichoke season.
Artichoke.
Very little else in this world that I love more than a good artichoke.
I love artichoke.
It always feels like a short season.
Yeah, but it's a very good. No, it's actually not that. I mean, it's about 3-4 months.
Yeah. It still feels short. Maybe it's just because I love it so much.
Well, by the time you realize they're in, you're already a month in.
That's probably true. So we're going to use artichokes in every single course. And as we like to do, we like to invite a special guest.
Oh, do tell.
And Sarah, our production assistant, suggested Wes Anderson. Do you know Wes Anderson?
Yes, of course.
Director.
Wow,
he has a new movie out.
Why Wes with artichoke?
I think maybe she just likes Wes Anderson.
All right, that's cool.
Yeah, she's given me the nod.
He's a talented man.
He is a prototype, that one. He is a man of his own style for sure. He's definitely got a very specific characteristic. And he's got a new movie out called Isle of Dogs. So maybe we're just...
It's called what?
Isle of Dogs.
Oh, wow.
So maybe we're just doing a little cross promo for his film.
Like he needs it.
Yeah, exactly. Like he needs it. So, Mr. Rotaro,
So the first thing I'm going to say is I know you're a good cocktail maker.
Yes.
And I know you love cocktails just like I do.
I'll take care of the cocktail
hour.
I almost never cook at these parties, but I feel like...
Well, you're the hostess who's the mostest.
Yeah, I entertain. I make sure the house is clean. But for the cocktail hour, I'm going to start with a little aperitivo, a little Italian aperitivo made with Cynar, which is a liquor. It's... It's very similar to a lot of different Amaros and bitters. It's got that very bitter quality. Some people liken it to an Aperol, if you're familiar with that. But it's actually made out of artichoke. That's its main kind of herbal ingredient. So I'm going to make a little aperitivo with that, a splash of, let's say, cava, maybe a little Prosecco, whatever kind of bubbles you choose on hand. And maybe just a little splash of gin in there, too. little bubbly Negroni with Cynar. Okay, great. And then alongside of that, one of my favorite things that you can do with an artichoke is just deep fry those babies. Mm. And I learned this recipe.
Those are the baby artichokes.
Yeah, since Tom's not here, I know he loves to make this dish, which is to take those little tiny baby artichokes where you can essentially eat the whole thing except for those outer leaves, cut off the little tips, cut them in half, dredge them in a little flour, cornmeal, not batter per se, salt and pepper, and fry them up in some olive oil until they're nice and crispy. Mm. So we'll have a little crispy artichoke snack with our aperitivo. Oh. Does that sound good?
I mean,
do you think Wes
totally
would like it? Tina's saying so.
He's going to be all over that.
Yeah, okay, good.
So now he's half crock. We can take care of the dinner.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Thierry, what would you like to make for the salad?
Well, I think we need to start in with a little salad of shaved artichoke. Mm-hmm. So just take an artichoke bottom. So, you know, we have all the leaves. And in the kitchen, I love to use the heart of the artichoke, but I hate to see the leaves to go to waste. So I like to blanch the whole artichoke. Just the top part of the artichoke, which is just the leaves. Blanch all the leaves. So you can use the leaves on the side as a dipping item like you would do at home. Just do a little nice dipping of the leaves.
Yeah.
But most importantly, I'm going to take the heart raw, the bottom, after taking off all the hair, and then shave it through with a mandoline, very, very thin, and do a toasted pine nuts artichoke, sherry vinegar, and a little bit of canola oil salad.
Delicious.
And, of course, some greens with that. Watercress right now is in beautiful season. Goes well with the bitter of the artichoke. It's got that brightness and that bitterness. So make a nice little watercress salad. Shave all the artichoke. Toast some pine nuts. Mix the pine nuts and the artichoke with a sherry oil vinaigrette. Just salt, pepper, sherry vinegar, sherry, and canola oil.
What a great idea. A lot of people think of artichokes. We've all grown up with them steamed or boiled. But what a lovely utilization.
Just make it very thin
it
when they're young and tender. You know, and I'm not talking about the tiny little one. I'm talking about a regular artichoke. Trying to make sure it's not an old, old artichoke. Just try to make sure it's firm when you buy it. And then you take that bottom and you shave it super, super thin. Almost see the daylight through it. And you'll have a wonderful salad on your hand.
All right. It's time for the entree. And I will say, maybe you can make the protein, but I've got an idea for the artichokes in the entree, Mr. Rotaro.
Oh, you do?
Tell me what you think.
Okay,
I will. I'm no chef.
Go ahead.
Just a sweet little home cook.
You give me your version. I'll tell you mine very quickly.
Okay, perfect. So one of my favorite cookbooks is the Zuni Cafe Cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things that I ever made out of that book was the braised artichoke recipe. Mm-hmm. It's not chock full of pictures, that cookbook. So I need the visual help of a photo along with the recipe. And it's really quite simple. Again, you're taking off the outer leaves, cutting off those very spiny little tips, scooping out that choke of the artichoke right above the heart after you cut it in half. And then you're really just braising those slowly in the oven with chicken stock, a little lemon peel. In that particular recipe, I think they use olives, so you could pick out your favorite olives. I personally like kind of the big Italian green olives. Castelvetrano, I think, is what those are called. And just let those cook away until the artichokes become nice and tender.
And what's the protein?
I think that you should take care of the protein.
See, I was gonna do squab. I love squab breast with artichoke. I think it's a beautiful marriage. squab bean, in case you guys don't know, it's like a baby pigeon, farm-raised. And it's got a breast about yay big, 2 inch across, and maybe 3 inch, 4 inch long. No, 3 inch long. So it's not very big, but it's really beautiful red meat. And it's really delicious, delicious, tender meat.
And with squab, are you preparing it much like you would, say, like
chicken
a duck
breast?
More like a chicken breast
because it's not... The only thing you want to do on the squab is crisp the skin on the... And the skin is very thin. So crisp the skin and then flip it back on the meat side and finish to cook all of it in brown butter. So you take your butter, you put it in the pan until it gets brown. Then, you know, and it's not very big, so it's a very easy thing to cook. And if you don't want to do that, you could always do chicken, because chicken is always a great fallback. And for
dessert.
I'm going to do a, you know, we made too many artichoke bottom, so I'm going to puree some of that artichoke, and I'm going to incorporate a little honey in it and some blue right next to it. Some nice little blue, probably a nice...
Oh, blue cheese?
Yeah,
okay.
Bleu d'Auvergne, which is very creamy and very rich, but not too strong, not as strong as Roquefort. And it's a beautiful match with a puree of artichoke, a little honey in the artichoke puree. And Tom would be like, of course you're going to make a puree. And then some crostini on the side, so you can use the artichoke and honey as a spread and put your blue cheese right on top of that. And I think Wes will have a nice little time.
I think so. I'm convinced. You know, a lot of people probably at the beginning of the segment are like, how are you going to make artichoke for four courses, including a dessert? But you know what?
How did we do?
There's always cheese.
Yep.
I think you guys are excited, I see.
You guys didn't get any of this or what?
No, they're writing down notes about how to make a raw artichoke salad, the whole nine. It's really happening. All right. Next up, we have Nikki Koth from Cuoco Restaurant, and apparently she's going to take us to the Upside Down. Do you know about this, Stranger Things?
I can't wait.
You need to get on Netflix a little bit more. I have a feeling you're in the kitchens too much.
Probably true.
That is probably true. You're listening to Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen. I'm Katie O.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And we are joined by wine manager of Cuoco, Nikki Koth. And Stan, what is your official title?
Pasta chef.
Pasta chef Stan, our favorite. You were here not that long ago to chat about meatballs. But this time, we're talking Stranger Things, not the Netflix series. Yeah. Although I'm assuming based on that, just ever so slightly. You guys are doing a special dinner, is it? Is it a one-time dinner called Stranger Things with Cuoco?
We are. We've got something really special going on at Cuoco. We have a lot of really cool esoteric wines, and Stan has been working on so many different styles of pastas that people are not familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And him and I were talking one day, and we were like, why don't we just do a Stranger Things dinner? Why not show everybody that you can have really awesome, funky, cool wines with these super funky tasting pastas with different textures and different flavors.
So what makes a wine cool or strange?
You know, so we have been doing this from our cellar program at Cuoco.
Which is in South Lake Union.
Yes.
Right off of Terry Avenue, is it?
Yes, one of Tom's Italian TDR restaurants.
How old is Cuoco now?
It's about 8 years old.
So you're right smack in the heart of Amazon there.
Yes.
It's a great restaurant, and it's a beautiful restaurant. Every time I go there, I'm like, wow, man, this is so cool. Everything is made from scratch.
Yes.
I mean, that's pretty impressive.
A lot of big thanks to Stan here.
Great job with your pastas.
So you've got this amazing cellar.
Yes.
There's some kind of interesting, maybe a little bit more challenging to find wines.
Yes.
And maybe some wines that take a little bit more explaining.
Yeah, and that's what we did. We actually did a couple of test runs. I started pulling a lot of these wines that we weren't selling, that weren't on our menu. And I thought, you know, why don't I just offer these by the glasses?
Mm-hmm.
And we did a Croatina. It was like a 2007. I started offering a Frappato by the glass, Frasia by the glass, these grape varietals that people don't normally drink. And I was just giving people little tasters here and there, just kind of trying to influence their palate a little bit.
Say, how do you influence a palate like that? Because a lot of people, I know I'm one of those people, quite frankly, when I pull up the wine list when I go to dinner, you know, I just see a lot of words. And to some degree, I know certain elements that I like. I know that there are certain French wines that I like or certain Italian wines.
Yeah.
But outside of my limited knowledge, I don't tend to experiment beyond. So how do you get someone who is interested, but maybe is a little timid, to branch out?
You know, I'm a big talker, so I kind of just force it on people. You know, I see somebody enjoy, like, I see them ordering a special maybe, or I have a couple of regulars who come in really often, and every time we have a special menu, they always order the special menu. Mm. Every time there's, like, a new glass pour, they always try the new glass pour. And so it kind of started that way, where I would just go up to the guests, and I would just say, hey, do you want to try something cool? And they would always be open to it.
Right. No one ever wants to be like, no, I don't want to try something cool.
Well, yeah. I think it's a challenge, right? And it's, right. It's an experience. And I think people want that when they dine out.
Right.
And it's been so inspiring to see people coming out and ordering bottles of, you know, Dolcetto and Frasier and things that, like, you know, usually you might order Sangiovese or Barolo or Nebbiolo. So.
Yeah, and I think it's very interesting to mention that it's part of the customer as well as your job.
Yes.
To be able to be adventurous. You know, you go to a restaurant. If you don't know, you should, in today's world, in most good restaurants, you can be able to ask the server, may I just have a taste of this? Or, you know, give me a profile, because this is what I like. I like fruity, forward, you know, or I like them bone dry. You know, already you put a spectrum in the taste palette than you're looking for.
Totally, yeah. I met actually this sommelier who told me that he had a guest ask for a bottle pour and he wanted a taste of it, and he thought, you know what, actually none of my staff has tried it, why don't I just open it up, give him a taste, and then we can staff train it or do it as a special glass pour for $15
exactly.
And I just kind of took that in my brain and I ran with it, and now I just do this special every day, and it's been so much fun.
Yeah, it's very fun for the customer as well as for you. Yeah.
Alright, Stan the pasta man, you've got this event on April 20th at Cuoco. Let's talk about the menu for a little bit, because you have these interesting, kind of esoteric, obscure wines. How do you go about making a menu for that?
Well, when we started talking about this menu, the first pasta that came to my mind that I wanted to put on is this pasta that I had when I went to Italy last year. It's called Testaroli, and it is from the southern Liguria area. And it's basically a crepe. It's just a mixture of flour and water, really liquidy. You whip air into it. You get it in a really hot cast iron till it's smoking, and you cook one side till it's nice and brown, almost burnt, and then you pull it off and leave one side raw.
They're
you cool
clean.
It, cut it into little triangles, and you toss it with pesto. And so I knew that I wanted that because it is a very unique texture, unlike anything I've ever had in the dumpling world, because it's kind of gummy, but it has a lot of bite to it at the same time. And it's super simple with this set, which is one of my favorite things when it comes to pasta. And then the orecchietti, that's such a classic shape, but I wanted to show that you could do a little something different. So instead of the liquid, which is normally water, I just put like a black garlic puree. And so when you
eat it,
which
is so delicious, right? It's a very specific, very savory umami flavor you're getting there that you're imparting into the orecchietti, it sounds like.
And what I like about the orecchietti is it kind of holds the sauce inside of it, so it's really nice. It's a great vessel for sure.
And I love that when you eat multiple pieces, the black garlic flavor actually slowly builds up in your palate. So you eat one and it's like there, but then as you eat three or four, it really starts to show. And that I really love that.
And what are you pairing with the orecchietti? What's it?
So that with the orecchietti is going to be like a shrimp scampi style and some broccoli rabe. So kind of keeping the traditional set, which is loose uncased sausage and a heavy hearty green. So we wanted to keep it somewhat traditional, but with this, you know, new approach to it.
I'm going to toss it back to Nikki now. So I'm hearing about this black garlic orecchietti and how that flavor is kind of building as you continue to eat it. How do you then pair a wine appropriately with something like that?
A lot of tasting.
Yeah. Oh, must be very hard for you. No one's feeling bad for you right now, Nikki.
You know, I recently had the Frigio, which has this nice frizzante texture to it, but it's also got a really nice minerality, and I've been noticing that with the black garlic and even bagna cotta. I actually experimented with the bagna cotta, so that kind of salty umami flavor as well.
Right. Explain what the bagna cotta is.
Yeah, it's an anchovy olive oil like sauce. It's a warm bath of like anchovies, lemon zest, a little bit of salt, pepper. I think sometimes people put some parmesan in it and some herbs.
I have to remind you, the audience has yet to eat breakfast, so you know,
just with bread, it's just like delicious.
Everyone's tummies are growling.
These guys
right
are
now.
On clouds. They're like, oh my god, I'm so hungry.
Yeah, but that, you know, I just did some kind of guessing and trying different wines and different styles that we have. at Cuoco, and then I was like, let's do the Frasier with this. And then we've got the frappato going with the pesto. So we haven't quite tried that out yet, but we're...
I've got strong faith in you. The one thing that I definitely want to talk about on this menu, which I think kind of tends to freak people out a little bit, which is, I believe, your first course, which is crispy tripe salad with fava leaf farfalle, walnut vinaigrette. Tell us a little bit about this dish, Stan.
Well, we were trying to pick an appetizer, and obviously we still wanted to kind of utilize a pasta in it, and that was one of the things we thought was, what do we love that's a little bit off? And tripe is definitely one of those things. Anytime I go abroad and tripe's on the menu, I will eat it anytime I see it. And so we were a little hesitant at first because it is such an odd item. But
right, tripe is the lining of the stomach.
Yep.
It's the best spot, right?
Yeah.
It is.
Which we're really unfamiliar with here in the United States, but actually around the world it's very commonly beloved, actually.
Yeah, very much so. And then we were also thinking, you know, what's a kind of a fun thing that you don't see on menus too often? That's a pasta salad. So we kind of wanted to make a fun play on that. And so we're going to do this laminated dough where I take the fava leaves and actually roll them into the pasta. So when you eat it, you'll get a little bit of that flavor from the leaf inside. It'll have a beautiful texture. And then you'll have the amazing sweetbreads and tripe with it.
And that's again, another fascinating element that you're using of the fava plant. Not a lot of people know that you can also eat those leaves, and you're just rolling it right in there. I love... Are you going to go to this?
Yeah, I'm very
like
excited.
You're ready.
So you're doing, like, what, five courses and... Five wines?
So it'll be four courses and four wines.
We've got
some really awesome, actually for the tripe salad, we have a 2006 Gewürztraminer from Alto Adige. That's going to be really awesome.
That's a perfect wine to go with that crispy
fried
stuff.
Yeah, I think so too. But we've got a Fernet Panna Cotta for the dessert and just a couple different liqueurs.
That sounds delicious too.
Fernet, such a great digestive. Might as well just put it in dessert.
Why not?
I've never thought about
two
that.
Two in one.
I just generally have a little
and
sip.
But only $75, right?
Yes.
And you can go to TomDouglas.com, purchase tickets. It sounds like a fantastic meal. You two sound like you've put a lot of good work, good palate.
Well, and Stan and I will actually be there talking about the pasta and the wine, so we'll actually be leading the whole entire experience. So
that's awesome.
We had a really good time.
Congratulations and best of luck on this dinner. It's Friday, April 20th from 6:30 to 8:30, $75. You got to go to TomDouglas.com and buy some tickets.
Go to that events page. All right. Thanks, Nikki and
Stan.
Thank you, guys.
Coming up, production assistant Sarah and Rachel Bell are here to talk about Passover and what will be on their Seder tables. You're listening to Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
You're listening to Seattle Kitchen's On Demand, brought to you this week by Bonide. Check out the Bonide family of products for all your gardening needs. Whether it's bugs or weeds, there's a Bonide product to help. Find out more about Bonide and a dealer near you at Bonide.com.
Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen. I'm Katie O.
And I'm Terry Rotero, the chef in the hat.
And it's time to talk about Passover Feast. We've got Rachel Bell. Hello, Rachel Bell.
Hello.
Friend from Cairo. And... congratulations to you. You've just recently been nominated for the illustrious James Beard Award in broadcasting for your amazing podcast, Your Last Meal.
She just started a show. We've been doing ours for 13 years.
When you do it better, you get awards.
I guess that's just how it is. We must suck at what we do.
Well, jeez. I'm just fresh. You guys are all raggedy and tired from a decade of work. I'm fresh off a year and a half.
You're right. We've been rolled out of the scene.
It's impossible to think that anyone doesn't know your podcast at this point. But for those listeners out there that are like, what is this about? Can you just give us a really quick little brief synopsis?
A nugget, if you will.
A nugget.
I can. Your Last Meal, I interview celebrities about what they would want to eat for their last meal. So we've had Greta Gerwig, Guillermo del Toro, who just won a couple of Oscars.
Oh, yes, very important.
Alicia Silverstone, Maria Shriver, Mario Batali. Can we still talk about him? Okay, cool. Okay, no,
no,
never mind.
Moving on.
But yeah, so we talk about what they would want for their last meal and just other things that we chat about as well. And then I take that food and then we go down what is is the history of it and what is the culture, and there's usually one or two other guests.
It's so fun because that is a conversation that a lot of people who love food are already having, right? And so you always want to know, like, what meal would it be that you would want for that last meal? And you're tackling that with some people that we would not in any other circumstance get to hear those answers from.
And you get to learn fun facts, like Neil deGrasse Tyson almost became an exotic dancer. These are the kind of facts you
tune
in.
I believe that. Yeah. He seems freaky deaky.
He said he used to be real flexible.
Okay, moving on.
Yeah, you have to move between the planets. So that's, yes, you have to be flexible.
That's right. That's
fifth dimension stuff. All right, let's talk about Passover. We've got Sarah, our production assistant, also on the mic here. And
a Jewess as well.
We're gathering.
Our beautiful Jewesses.
There's a lot of Carls in the studio.
There are, just on this side.
I used to have mine, but they left.
That's what he hides under the hat, is just baldness. But let's talk. He knows it's true. We love him. We love him. We love that hat. It's iconic.
We do.
Let's talk about Passover.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit about the traditions and what's generally served, and then maybe what you'll be doing at your Seder?
Yeah, so Passover is my favorite holiday because it is all eating. So basically, it's a religious service of sorts at the table. So everybody sits around the table, and you have a book, and you go through the story of Passover, and you drink wine at certain points where the book tells you to, and you eat certain symbolic foods. And this is the story of the Jews being slaves in Egypt. There was a pharaoh. And this is the story with the 10 plagues. And then it's the story of the Jews freeing themselves and the Let My People Go, leaving the desert. So we have, it's called a Seder. Is Passover is the holiday, and the Seder is the ceremony. So you have a Seder plate with a bunch of symbolic items on it. We love symbolism. The Jews love symbolic things.
We do.
Yes. So at different parts in the Seder, at one point you dip parsley into salt water and you eat that, and the salt water represents the tears that the Jews cried when they were slaves in Egypt. You eat a hard-boiled egg that's supposed to represent, under my understanding, new life.
Yes.
Just kidding.
And pain. Let's see. And we eat something called charoset, which is chopped nuts and honey and wine and apples. And that represents the mortar from when the Jews were slaves and laying bricks. So a lot of symbolism. Even with Hanukkah, a lot of people don't know the reason we eat latkes is because everything has to be fried in oil. And that has to do with the story of Hanukkah. So we eat our history.
I love that. That's what I love about your culture.
Don't you do cedar more often than just on Easter or on Passover?
No, it's just once a year.
Okay.
It is. Passover does last like 8 days. So
I
suppose you could maybe do multiple Seders if you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
That feels like a lot.
That does.
I'm sure. I don't know if people who are ultra religious do one every night. I know that like somebody might do one on different days. So you might end up going to a couple. Like I'm doing mine at the end of Passover this time. And I might go to one at the beginning.
So how much creative license is then taken on that dish? So you have these various things that symbolize different parts of the Passover story, really, or the Seder story. And then where does brisket come in?
Okay.
Me being a goy, I just got to know, like, when can we talk about brisket?
We can talk about brisket. Okay, so I forgot to mention, like, the most important delicious food, in my opinion, which this is when you eat matzo ball soup, first of all, which is so delicious. You cannot have any leavened bread on Passover. And if you're really following the rules, you don't do that for the entire week. And you have to clean your house of it and take everything out of the house. Because when the Jews were leaving the desert in a hurry, they didn't have time for their bread to rise. And that's why we eat matzah, which is a big dry cracker that as a child they spread butter on and cream cheese on, and you're like, when do we have to we're not slaves anymore, do we have to keep eating this? So the things that you have to stick to are the symbolic things on the Seder plate.
Okay.
And you eat those things as the book tells you to. Then everybody has their gefilte fish, which I love. Then you have your matzo ball soup. Then when you get to the main meal, that's where you have creative license. Brisket is the most common thing. I am not a fan of brisket.
Ooh,
there I said
interesting.
It.
Interesting.
Until I went to Austin, Texas, and discovered that kind of brisket.
Oh, like Franklin's? You went to Franklin's Barbecue?
I did not have time to wait in line, but I had brisket at many other places.
Smoky.
Sean and I actually went to Austin together.
Smoky brisket.
That's delicious brisket. I'm not into the brisket that Jews do is like a slow braise, and it melts. It's very soft. It's just not my taste.
It seems potentially, I don't know, but a little bit similar to how the Irish cook brisket on St. Patty's Day, except for it's not corned, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it's not corned, and it's a different flavor profile. Okay. I'm not, because I've never made a brisket. I don't know. Do you know what is
I made
classic?
A brisket last year.
Oh, look at her proud face. Hey. What'd you put in yours? How did you do it?
I did mine with plum and star anise, so it was not nice. Like a traditional.
That sounds very Chinese of you.
But I was thinking it was from prune juice is often involved in the Jewy brisket.
Yeah, from like growing up, all I remember is that it gets thrown into a crock pot for like 8 hours, and you just keep pouring things on it until it's
just anything. So it doesn't disappear and dry out?
Yep, that's it.
I do something different every year. I'll do chicken, kind of like a Moroccan style I've done with like, you know, the cracked olives and apricots. I took a recipe a couple years ago. We had a woman on this show. I happened to be here the day of the taping, and she did steelhead with a nettle pesto. Mm-hmm. And I did that, and that was really good.
Delicious.
But by the time, you're just eating and eating. Like, by the time the meal comes, you're full because you've already had soup and fish and hard-boiled eggs and harosan and matzah and horseradish. And then there's dessert.
Which is what?
But you can't use any flour or leavening agents, so you have to be creative. This year I'm making a dessert that I picked up. I walked part of the Camino de Santiago in Spain last year.
Uh-huh.
And the best thing I ate on that trip was a very dense, low almond cake that's mm-hmm. called the Torta de Santiago. And it's just citrus, almond flour, sugar, basically, and then like powdered sugar on the top. That's what I'm going to do.
Mm. Lots of honey.
There's no honey actually in it. But you make a little design. Like you get a stencil and you do a little powdered sugar design on the top. But this is, we eat macaroons on Passover is very common. And these weird jellied fruits that are in the shape of the fruit you're eating.
Yep. Weird jellied fruits in the shape of the fruit that you're eating.
They're like Jewish applets and cutlets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. I'm feeling you. I get what you're putting down there.
I like that.
Well, these Seder dinners sound delicious.
It's the best.
You're going to be stuffed, I think.
Get invited to a Seder if you're listening. You will be so excited. People love, I don't ever have Jews at my Seder. I just invite all my goys. I get a different group every year. Mm. This year I invited Ken Jennings to my Seder.
Oh, did he say yes?
He did. So I'm going to have a couple Mormons at my Seder. I've had a Japanese sushi chef at my Seder. You just bring them all in.
You ever had a French chef at your Seder?
You want to come?
Sure.
All right. You're welcome.
I think you've got your Seder invite. Thank you, Rachel Bell and Sarah, for joining us. Coming up next,
Taste of the Week.
Taste of the Week. You're listening to Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to the Seattle Kitchen. Thanks for hanging with us for that long commercial break.
And long it was.
Long, long, long. I'm Katie O.
And I'm Thierry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And you're normally probably accustomed to hearing Tom Douglas, but he is not with us today. He is probably in a Speedo somewhere on the island of Hawaii.
That would be a sight.
That would be a sight. That's
Tom,
what I was
bring
trying,
back some pictures, please.
That's what I was trying to help with, is everyone visualizing where Tom is, what he might be up to on the beach.
I'm pretty sure he's not in a Speedo on the beach.
Yeah.
I think he's on a golf course somewhere,
Well,
though.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so for everyone's sake. We're coming to you from the Hot Stove Society. This is where we tape, a beautiful cooking school in the heart of downtown Seattle, in the Hotel Andra on the corner of 4th and Virginia. If you want to come to one of our tapings, simply visit the Hot Stove Society.com, or if you want to have more of an extended, say, stay in the Hot Stove Society, beautiful cooking school, they've got the Food Lovers Weekend. This time it's road tripping. That's the theme. It's a 3-day event that happens over the weekend, full of amazing, amazing food. And if you're accustomed to listening to the show and hearing the sweet, sweet voice of Brittany Bartolabin, the pastry chef for Tom Douglas Restaurants, she will be here as one of the many, many chefs doing demos, doing something about ooey gooey treats. Apparently, across America, they like ooey gooey treats. She'll be on the show later today, so maybe we'll ask her about that. But right now, let's reminisce a little bit, Thierry.
Reminiscing is good.
All right. Let's talk about our favorite taste of the week. I certainly had one. I had quite a few, but why don't you kick it off for us?
So there's a new restaurant in Madison Valley, right across from Nishino, if you guys know where that is. There's a sushi restaurant called Nishino. Across the street, there used to be a place called O Chocolate, and now it's filled with a lovely little new restaurant called Petite Galerie, G-A-L-E-R-I-E.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, the operator and chef is Rob Sefcik, who used to be the chef at Rover's and the opening chef of Lule for the first couple of years.
So that's where he went. He learned all his French techniques from you and opened up a little spot just down the way.
He's a very talented guy, and he has plenty of, I think he's got plenty of chances to make this really nice. I was there Friday night, excuse me, and you know when you have a meal of, you know, of course he sent us a bunch of courses and different dishes, and but the most impressive course that I thought was really amazing was the first bite. The first bite of the little tiny smoked cured salmon with two little croutons of brioche on each side. And the flavor on that salmon was just unbelievable.
Mm.
And I'm not to this moment, I forget to ask him how he finished it. But I'm pretty sure it has a flavor of yuzu or something like this. Very beautiful.
Something to kind of brighten it up a little bit.
But not too much. Just a nice hint in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And that salmon was perfectly cured, fresh, gorgeous, diced. I mean, that bite was just sensational.
So Petite Galerie, is it a little bit more like a bistro, would you say? Or is it a little fancier
would call it a neighborhood adult restaurant. It's got white tablecloth.
You might want to clarify what neighborhood adult restaurant means.
Meaning then the people who live around Capitol Hill, Montlake, Lachaye, Madrona are going to love this restaurant to go out on a date.
And good
to
date
go
night
out
restaurant.
To a little bit more, you know, it's, I mean, you could bring your kids there. They have a bar. I was sitting at the bar and it was delicious and it was a beautiful setting. But I would recommend this to be not necessarily a 2-year-old kids running around. It's not that kind of restaurant. That's what I would say.
Hmm.
So. But it is definitely, I think Rob and his team is going to do a very beautiful work over there.
Awesome. I'll have to check it out. That's not too far from my home.
I recommend it.
My taste of the week, also quite a bit French. I went to Bar Melusine, a sweet little restaurant on Capitol Hill owned by Renee Erickson, and I went for brunch. A lot of people don't know. I mean, those are very popular restaurants. A lot of people don't know that they're just booming during the brunch hour. Walked right in, had a little sparkly mimosa. That wasn't
as
the taste of the week.
Oblige.
Wasn't the taste of the week, but it was pretty good. But what I did end up ordering is the salad lyonnaise. Beautiful menu, but something about it just really spoke to me. It was a gorgeous salad of frisée, as it traditionally is, a poached egg. But what really took it over the top for me was instead of using lardon, which I think is more traditional, is they took a shredded duck confit. So that salty, delicious, very unctuous duck. And then they took the duck fat, I assume, and made very crispy little croutons out of what I'm assuming is seawolf fancy bread. You had these, you know, just very heady, luscious croutons, the meat, the runny egg yolk on the frisée. It was a perfect salad. It was
nice brunch. As much as we have seen salad lyonnaise on many menus, I mean, I have them in both of my restaurants. I just think it's a quite essential salad. You know, it's like a nice green salad, nice little bite of the vinegar, croutons, and then bacon. Who doesn't like diced bacon? And, of course, the beautiful runny egg on top.
It's always so funny to me. Like, I always feel like I'm doing myself, my body a favor by picking the salad. making the healthy choice.
We'll have to measure that.
Yeah, but then it's just dressed in all that goodness. So it kind of outweighs it. Tina, we only have a couple minutes. Do you have anything that you had that was super delicious this week?
You know, I went to Taste Washington.
You had a lot of delicious things.
So many things. A bit overwhelming. But there's a new restaurant. It took over the space at Vaughn's right in front of Pacific Place called Writer.
Yep.
And I had this delicious smoked salmon on top of a sesame cracker. That was right. It was quite delightful. Same kind of idea of what you had, Terry.
Right.
Only it was just a nice balance between salt and kind of depth of flavor for that.
Yeah, so I've been to Writer. All I had was a cocktail and some oysters, but the bar is humming and it's definitely
funny. When I was there, I drank many Negronis with Amy Richardson, who takes care of the Hot Stove Society, and we ate fries. So it must
I didn't know Amy drank.
You can go French fries and Negroni at Writer, or you can go a little high end.
Yeah, exactly.
I also just read they have a oyster happy hour. It's a progressive. It starts at 3 o'clock. $1.50 an oyster.
I think you and I should walk from our offices in Pioneer Square and go eat some oysters.
Date afternoon.
All right. Coming up, we go fishing for some pro tips. We'll tell you all about how to best prepare a delicious piece of fish. You're listening to Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Welcome back to Seattle Kitchen. I'm Katie O.
And I'm Terry Roturo, the chef in the hat.
And we've got our resident professional chef, Terry Roturo, here with us. So we're going to go over some pro tips. But first...
But did you notice how our audience is very fill and joyful? And how was breakfast?
So good.
Isn't that some good sandwich?
Everyone's eating their sandwich from the Dahlia Bakery on a fresh-made, homemade English muffin. Their choice of... mushroom, ham, was bacon the other choice today, I believe?
Yep.
And if you want one of those breakfast sandwiches, and perhaps to even maybe just listen to us for a couple hours on on your Tuesday morning, head over to the Hot Stove Society webpage, hotstovesociety.com, and grab a little ticket. Come and have breakfast with us.
I would even say that if you don't have time to come to the show, you should definitely stop at the Dahlia Bakery on your way to work and grab one of those, because... we've been doing this for many years, and we've been eating your sandwich weekly. And I tell you, I've never had a bad one.
These sandwiches
are astonishing. I've gained some weight, but I'm very happy about it.
Yes, they are quite delicious, and there's a number of really, really delicious things. And actually, we'll be having Chef Brittany Bard-Laban, who takes care of quite a bit of the goods at the Dahlia Bakery, and so we can talk to her more about that. But first, let's talk about some pro tips. We're going to start out with fish. We had a long conversation earlier in the show today about how to pick out scallops, but let's start talking about fish. The first tip, Mr. Rotro, weigh in on this. Rather than shop for a specific type of fish, go to your fishmonger and see what looks fresh.
Yes, 100%. Same thing with the meat, same thing with your wine, same thing with anything. You know, you don't go to professional and tell them what to do. You just go and ask their advice. This is the best thing you're going to be able to get out of that. You know, if you make good friends with a fishmonger, he's going to tell you, hey, this just came in. You know, and you tell him, I'm not interested in... the 2 weeks old sole, I'm interested in the stuff that just came today. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be calamaries, it could be sole, it could be salmon, cod. I mean, in this part of the world, we're fortunate enough to have a giant body of water right next to us that provides us with a bounty of different seafood. It's extremely important that you are ready to eat what's fresh and what's right there on the counter.
I think a lot of people visit their fishmonger with a specific fish in mind. So I do think that, and maybe you can speak to this, Terry, that if you're looking for a particular type of fish, to talk to your fishmonger and see what maybe a better substitute for that day might be.
Correct.
For example, you might be going in for a salmon, which is a meatier fish. It's a more oily fish. And so perhaps a cod is not...
correct. It's not exactly...
the correct exchange.
Right. I would go more like, if I was doing salmon, I would do steelhead or I would do trout. You know, this is more a little bit on the richer, oily fish kind of flavor, mm-hmm. just like salmon is.
Mm-hmm.
But again, truly and truly, once again, just ask your fishmonger, because he's the one who's going to tell you this just came in. And you look at the fish, you know, when you look, when you're buying fish, there are a few telltale signs that you have to not forgive.
Let's talk about the telltale signs.
So, number one, you put your finger on the fish. If your finger goes through the fish and fresh, you know, a fresh fish, a 48-hour fish will still be firm, will have some firmness to it. So when you press on it, it should, your finger shouldn't be going straight to the belly. You know, it should be able to have a little resistance to it. The scales on the fish, if there is still scale, should definitely be shiny, should have a nice little glow to it. And the eye should be clear of an eye should be. You know, if it's a white, glossy eye, that fish has been out of the water for quite some time.
And that's if you're seeing a whole fish with the head
correct.
On.
Correct. And again, the reason I'm saying and talking about whole fish, I know you guys are scared to work with fish at home. Have your fishmonger do it. Go buy a whole fish. Have him cut it for you. Have him fillet it for you. Have him portion it for you. And then, you know, if you buy a whole salmon, for example, we're using salmon as an example,
mm-hmm.
you know, just put some of it in the freezer. It's the best fish of the day. It's better to freeze it, put it in the freezer. So next time you want to eat some salmon, you put it out of the freezer the night before, put it in your fridge, And then you get this gorgeous piece of salmon. It's still a gorgeous salmon.
Let's talk about actually, you're touching on something that I think we should discuss, which is frozen versus fresh,
right?
So when you're going to the store, you'll often see it labeled as previously frozen. Does that scare you off?
No. Me, what scares me is if it's been previously frozen, defrosted, refrosted. And some people do that. And that's the scary part of a piece of fish, because the second time around, I guarantee you, it doesn't get any better. It gets a lot worse. So you don't want to have a piece of fish like this. And you will see when you go to the fish department, number one, if you can't stand the smell, you should move out and go buy chicken. If you, you know, I'm going to pass on the fish today. If you look at the fish and there is tons of water around it, it's definitely a bad sign. There shouldn't be a pool of liquid around your fish. Your fish should be laying down on ice, should be the skin contact to the ice. The anterior flesh of the fish should not be on the ice because that will burn it. I mean, you guys understand that basic, right? So all these different telltales should be in there. And your fish should not have any dry meat on the outside, on the outskirts of the fillet or the pieces. They shouldn't be dry because that means it's been sitting there for quite some time. That's not fresh anymore. All those different signs are how you just look at that and you go, you know, by then you have a guy that kind of goes, you want something? And you're like, hold on one second. Let me do my research here. You know,
okay.
And they just...
Next tip we got here that says fix it fast, that it's not unlike cooking a chicken breast. What do you think about that, Mr. Rotro?
Well, fixing it fast means that when you cook a piece of fish, it will cook faster than in almost all the other protein you have in your refrigerator, chicken, pork, whatever. So you have to definitely understand that. You're not cooking your fish at 10 a.m. for lunchtime, unless you're doing a salad or something different.
Mm-hmm, where it's repurposed, maybe cool or
correct,
cold.
Correct.
Yeah.
But otherwise, you cook and you serve it. And it's within 15 minutes, a piece of fish is cooked and served. You know, 15, 20 minutes at the most. That's the longest time a piece of fish.
So you're cooking it fast.
Yeah.
What is the cookware you prefer to use?
So I like thick, heavy bottom pan for everything. Mm-hmm. I don't have 20 different kind of sort of pan. I only use one kind of pan in my kitchen, and they're the heavy bottom pan, whether it's cast iron or whether it's Viking or whatever, one of those brands.
Like a stainless steel.
Stainless steel, heavy bottom, and stainless steel inside.
And why do you like a heavy bottom pan?
So the reason I like them is because you turn it on, and you go make yourself a cocktail, and by the time you come back, the pan is almost hot enough. Meaning by that you need to really, really make sure the heat gets into the pan, so those pans get a little bit longer to warm up. However, when they're hot, they stay hot. So if you're trying to sear a piece of salmon on the skin side, you put a little bit of oil in your pan, you put your salmon skin down, and you wait. But that hot pan will be able to sear your skin. If your pan is not hot enough, the skin's going to start being shriveling, and it's never going to be crispy. It's going to stay like in this stage of like, well, that's not really what I want. Plus, it will stick like crazy. So when you try to turn your salmon, the whole thing's going to fall apart.
And nothing better than kind of a crispy skinned fish.
Oh, man.
Please, do not throw that delicious little morsel out.
Plus, it's a lot of flavor, but it's also protection to your salmon. Think about this. When you're putting on your barbecue, if you have a skin side down first, you just wait until, and you close your lid on your barbecue. By the time 10 minutes go by, not 15, 10 minutes on a 1.5-inch thick salmon, your salmon is perfectly cooked. And then when you put it out, you just take two big spatulas and you lift the meat off the skin. It will come right off, and you put your meat onto a platter. And you leave the skin on the grill, close the lid for another 2 minutes, and then you can take the skin off the grill, and it will be crisp and serve as a chip on the side.
Well, we just barely scratched the surface, the scales of all these fish tips. So maybe we will talk fish again sometime. But coming up, we've got pastry chef Brittany Bartoleben sharing her tips and tricks for Passover. You're listening to Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
Win big cash and prizes this April at Tulalip Resort Casino. Earn 250 points every Sunday to play the tax write-off kiosk game to win cash and free play. Plus, earn one entry into the final drawing April 29th to pocket your share of $20,000. Earn 750 points every Monday to collect your exclusive Stanley tool set. Find all the details at TulalipCasino.com.
I never thought I'd get to cast a spell in Hogsmeade.
I never knew I could soar above Hogwarts with Harry Potter and his friends.
I never knew what 120 miles per hour felt like until Fast and Furious Supercharged.
And I never thought I'd be okay with hearing that.
I never thought I would be turned into a minion. I never knew I would fight alongside Optimus Prime.
Take that, Megatron!
All right, Mom! I never thought coming face-to-face with a hungry T-Rex would make my dad scream so loud.
And I have never felt more scared or alive. If you haven't been to Universal Studios Hollywood lately, come see what you've been missing. You'll be amazed at what we've become. Plan your visit online and save at UniversalStudiosHollywood.com. Restrictions apply.
A cure for hepatitis C. Breakthroughs in HIV treatment, multiple sclerosis, and diabetes. Millions of lives saved and improved by science. Yet still science is often not a straight line to success. So here's to the path to progress. Traveled by 140,000 researchers with America's biopharmaceutical companies. Here's to the long road. To the twists and turns that try men's and women's souls. Here's to frustration and fatigue and dead ends. Here's to permission to fail so that success can follow. And here's to brave patients, 19,000 here in Washington, enrolled in clinical trials to help find new breakthroughs, one of which might save their life, and perhaps one day, yours. Welcome to the future of medicine for all of us, where together we go boldly. A message from America's biopharmaceutical companies. Visit GoBoldly.com.
So why not use this year's tax return on something you'll use and enjoy every single day? Natro, clear vision with Dr. King and King LASIK. Hey, with a little more daylight and a little more sunshine, Dr. King, it's the perfect time to go to King LASIK.
Imagine jumping in the pool this summer without the hassle of glasses or contact lenses. Picture yourself running, hiking, golfing, playing tennis, all with natural clear vision. If you're like I was, struggling with glasses and contacts, let me help you. LASIK is safe, fast, and the results are truly life-changing. In as little as 10 minutes, you could have the vision you've always dreamed of. So come on in, and we'll tell you if LASIK is right for you.
And now through April 30th, get $1,000 off King LASIK's most advanced technology. You can even pay for the procedure with tax-free dollars from your Flex spending account. King LASIK, don't forget, is now open in Linwood, they're open in Renton, and they're open in Tacoma. So what are you waiting for? Book your free LASIK consultation today and get $1,000 off through April 30th. Just go to kinglasik.com. That's kinglasik.com.
Concerned about running out of money, becoming a burden on loved ones, or ending up in a nursing home? Know your options. Tune in to Aging Options with life planning coach Rajiv Nagayic.
We hope to spend wisely, invest conservatively, but a single healthcare episode can decimate our savings and leave us on the doorstep of a nursing home. Join me and I'll show you how to protect your hard-earned savings, age in your own home, and avoid becoming a burden on loved ones.
Aging Options, Saturday mornings at 10.
Welcome to the Seattle Kitchen. I'm Katie O.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in a hat.
And we are joined by Brittany Bartolainvin, pastry chef extraordinaire here at Tom Douglas Restaurants. You're in charge of so many things. Can you just list a few of them? I know there's so many.
Well, the Dahlia Bakery, of course.
Most delicious.
I've got a smattering of restaurants I cover as well. The Dahlia Lounge, all the Sirius Pie locations, the market locations, so C-Town and Etta's, Palace Kitchen. And to a certain extent, to Nakasan, they do a lot in-house.
And you can add pretty much radio show
and radio show.
Weekly radio show.
Yeah,
radio
show. To your resume now. You're a regular weekly contributor,
yes.
And we're always so happy to have you on. We'll be talking in just a moment about Passover desserts,
yes.
Which I bet you have some really great ideas for. But first, we want to talk a little bit about the Food Lovers Weekend. They're doing something on April 27th, 28th, and 29th called road tripping, yeah. which is taking kind of a figurative trip across the country to taste all the different regional cuisines. But you'll be joining.
I will. I'm going to be sort of addressing the dessert part of that series. And we wanted to lean toward the gooey, comforting grandma's table classic desserts.
And is that what you think of when you think of like classic American desserts?
Classic Americana to me is just really comforting. Well, it's the desserts I grew up eating from my grandma's kitchen. And which was mostly cobblers and pies. But there seems to be some sort of, I don't know if this is strictly American, but it seems that way. We have a little obsession with gooey things.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis gooey butter cake will be one of the things addressed.
Gosh, I've been seeing that so much lately on my social.
It's experiencing a revival.
It really is. It's funny to see trends in both food and pastry kind of come and go.
Yeah.
And especially with the advent of social media now, where you're just constantly looking at Instagram at all these beautiful food photos. I can't tell you how many times I've seen that in even just the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Well, yeah.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, now people can learn how to make it.
And what can you just describe a little bit of what that texture is?
You know when you make a lemon bar and the edges are really caramelized and chewy? It's like that sans the lemon
And then the
flavor.
Center is like runny?
Runny, yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's got cream cheese in it, so there's a little tang from that, but it is sugary.
Well, but if you have a little bit of a sweet tooth, I feel like this is the perfect excuse to spend your weekend at the Hot Stove Society, learn a couple of regional dishes, including your kind of ooey gooey delicious desserts.
Yeah. And Tom's going to be doing some demo of fried chicken.
Of course.
Should be quite lovely, coming from Tom Douglas.
I'm sure.
Hands on, that's cool. And then Jack Timmons from from the barbecue place in South End. It's going to do a barbecue 101, which also should be, so you get fried chicken, then you get barbecue 101, then you get gooey pastries.
Yes, exactly.
That should be kind
Bring
of
a toothbrush, maybe plan on a cleanse afterwards.
And maybe a sleeping bag to take a nap afterwards as well. This is nothing for sissies. You got to really bring your eating
stomach. Champion eaters.
So to buy tickets, there is a few more tickets left. I think you go to tomdouglas.com and it's April 27, 28. And 29.
Perfect. All right, Brittany, let's talk about Passover desserts.
Yeah. Well,
there's some challenges involved.
There's some challenges involved.
Parameters, I would say.
Yes. So no leaveners, so no baking powder or nothing to make it rise. Mm-hmm. Everything's supposed to be unleavened. And then also no gluten. Maybe you can help me out with this.
You're looking at phoning your Jewish friend, Sarah Leibovitz, production assistant. Yeah. Sarah?
The rescue. It's no flour.
Just no flour.
No leaveners.
Yes. Milk is allowed because you're obviously not going to have meat in your dessert.
Egg white?
Hopefully not. Egg whites are fine.
Mm-hmm.
The most classic thing you see typically for Passover is a flourless chocolate torte. We've got a great one at the bakery that we have available.
And what to you makes the perfect flourless torte? That was, talk about a dish that was very popular on menus for a long time.
Yeah.
Was that really dense, sometimes they call it, I want to say like a decadence chocolate cake.
Yes, mm-hmm.
What makes the perfect
Well, there's two versions of it. There's one that's more of a souffle. It's like a fallen chocolate cake. And sometimes there's almond meal in it, sometimes not. It's basically just separated eggs. Your whites and your yolks are separated. They're both whipped. And then the yolks are mixed with melted good chocolate, mm-hmm. and then the egg whites are folded in, and then it's baked as is. And you get a little bit of that crunchy top.
Yeah,
the
that
center
kind of crackly
is really moist,
top.
Crackly top. Mm-hmm. It's usually dusted with powdered sugar and served with cream and berries, really simple. The other version is more of a baked chocolate mousse. It's the exact same components, with the little bit of cream folded in as well. Mm. And then you bake it in a water bath like a cheesecake.
So it doesn't boil and doesn't break.
Exactly. So it has more of the texture of a cheesecake. It's really, really creamy, really
decadent. I like that.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan.
And that's the version that we have available. Again, just dusted with powdered sugar.
Yep.
Serve it with cream and berries or just cream.
Or even more grated chocolate or whatever you can do.
Yeah, and that's great. Me personally, if I've just completed a large feast, which is typically done at Passover, I want something a little lighter.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of other options.
Panna cotta?
Panna cotta is a great one. I like a lemon ricotta torte. Mm-hmm. So it's a, sort of the same idea. So you're going to mix ricotta and egg yolks and almond meal and sugar. And then you're going to whip up your egg whites and fold that in and then bake it. And you get almost the texture of a cheesecake, like a cross between a cake and a cheesecake. It's really moist. It's really
and
delicious.
Lemon.
And lemon. And it's springy. Goes great with cream and berries. And that, to me, is just a perfect finish for
that
a large
meal. That sounds great.
Yeah.
I really think of this time of the year, just kind of as the weather gets a little bit warmer, of those lighter desserts, too,
exactly.
where you're bringing out those citrus notes and, you know, that little sunshiny feeling. Here in Seattle, we get the sun for maybe a second.
Yes.
Then it recedes back into the rain
right
clouds.
Right now, we're in second winter.
Yeah, right? We're definitely in second winter.
Yeah.
That sounds great. What about macaroons? Those are another thing that are
just
often...
just going to talk about.
Yes.
That. So, some little nibbles on your table just for the guests as they're arriving. Coconut macaroons are a great one. Also, chocolate mendiants. Am I saying that right, Chef?
Yep.
Okay.
What's a chocolate mendiant?
So you're just going to take tempered chocolate and drop it by the spoonful onto a sheet of wax paper or parchment paper. And then just before the chocolate sets, place some little dried fruits and nuts, candied fruits, candied ginger, just to make them look pretty. And it's just the most delicious little bite.
Also, I think it's so nice as someone that likes to always eat a lot of different things. Like, I like dim sum.
Yeah.
I like family-style dinners. The idea of having desserts kind of in that same way, like have a little macaroon, have a little chocolate
dim sum.
Dim sum.
Yeah.
I like
that.
You could start a whole restaurant, honestly. I think
you finish with a nice chocolate fondue.
Yeah.
You've got a pretty good idea. What about pies? Any thoughts on pies?
Pies are a little tougher because classic crust is going to have flour in it. I haven't nailed my gluten-free flour crust or pie crust.
Pie dough.
But it's a great opportunity to make like a cookie crust.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find an unleavened cookie, that's a really tough one, honestly. You can use the cut for cut blends, for pies. I don't love the texture of it. I'm not saying it's not possible. I'm saying I'm not the person.
You could just do a crustless pie.
Yeah, crustless pie. A pavlova is a really excellent
pavlova is a great
sub in. Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
Walk us through a pavlova. Always a very impressive looking.
I feel like I talk about pavlova a lot.
I'm
Everybody
ready
knows
to hear
it's
it.
My favorite dessert. So you're going to make a meringue, and then you're going to...
Which is egg white and sugar.
Egg whites and sugar whipped up. One thing we do is a Swiss meringue when we're making pavlova. So you're going to take your sugar and your egg whites in your mixing bowl and then put it over heat, whether that be a small flame from your burner or a bowl of warm water, and just whip it until it's warm to the touch. Then put it on your mixer and start whipping.
And what does that do?
It just warm egg whites rise better.
Ooh. And stabilize them more importantly so they don't... When you bake them, the water doesn't separate.
It doesn't deflate.
Correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then you're going to whip up your egg whites till they're white and fluffy and beautiful. And you can either scoop individuals or just make a big one, put it in a low temperature, usually around 200 degrees, and cook it for about an hour. And you want the center to be a little marshmallowy. That's what makes it lovely.
Gooey.
Gooey, exactly. The outside should be a little crackly. And then bake it. And then when it comes out of the oven, this is how I do it. There's other ways to do it, but I smash the center and then fill it with cream and fruit, and it's just perfect.
How lovely. And what fruit would you utilize this time?
This time of year, I would do poached rhubarb.
Yeah, I was just going to say rhubarb.
Yeah.
So good. I often think of that one with lemon curd as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Lemon curds and berries in the summertime when you have beautiful fresh blackberries or raspberries. Oh, so delicious.
And those flavors of lemon and meringue is just kind of a classic. Can't go wrong.
And lots of whipped cream.
Lots of whipped cream.
Lots of whipped cream. Got it.
Just because you can.
If you thought you were getting out of this with fruit and maybe some light egg whites, you're not. You're also adding quite a bit of lusciousness there. Well, Brittany, thank you for stopping in
Thanks for having me. And
chatting all about Passover baking. Coming up, Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge with Rachel Bell. You're listening to Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
This is Dave Ross. Monday on Seattle's Morning News, Dr. Gordon Cohen on why it takes more than counting calories to lose weight. We'll also meet John and Tracy Schneider. You may know them from the Seahawks. And how a billionaire working in secret took down the Gawker website. Monday on Seattle's Morning News.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Caitlin personalized her Shane Company engagement ring with a sapphire and told everyone on Yelp how much she loved it.
I wanted a sapphire engagement ring, and Shane Company's selection blew everyone else out of the water. The sapphires at other stores are very limited and bland. The Shane Company sapphire was stunning. If you want a truly individualized ring, this is the place.
Come to Shane Company for engagement rings that you can personalize with a natural diamond, ruby, or sapphire. We have all the beautiful shapes, including oval, princess, emerald cut, pear shape, cushion cut, heart shape, marquee, and of course, round. We deliberately sell our center stones loose. That way, you can choose a stone with the shape, size, and color that you feel is the prettiest for your ring. You know your Shane Company engagement ring will be unique because you personalized it. Now you have a friend in the diamond business, Shane Company and ShaneCo.com.
Sully here, and you want to know why I'm such a big fan of Simply Safe Home Security? Simply Safe system is ready for anything that gets thrown at it. If a storm takes out your power, Simply Safe is ready. If an intruder cuts your phone line, Simply Safe is ready. Say an intruder destroys your keypad or siren, Simply Safe will still call the authorities and get you the help that you need. And here's what I love about this. Sure, maybe it's overkill. Maybe you don't need to be ready for every worst-case scenario. But that's what makes Simply Safe's home security system so great. It's always ready. Now, Simply Safe's triple safeguard protection could cost an arm and a leg, but it doesn't. Instead, they only charge you what's fair. So 24/7 professional security monitoring is just $14.99 a month. And with Simply Safe, there are no long-term contracts and no hidden fees. That's why I recommend them to everyone I know. You got to check it out. Go today to simplysafechris.com. That's simplysafechris.com to protect your home and your family today. That's simplysafechris.com.
According to the National Institutes of Health, a weight loss program needs 6 key components to help people lose weight and keep it off long term. Only 2020 Lifestyles has it all, starting with physician supervision. Only 2020 has physicians overseeing every aspect of your weight loss program. The second and third keys to successful weight loss, nutrition and exercise. As a 2020 client, you'll meet with a certified registered dietitian every week and work out with an exercise physiologist 3 times a week. Plus, you'll be eating real food, not packaged food. Key number 4 to successful weight loss is lifestyle counseling. Only 2020 has licensed psychologists to help you build healthy new habits. And only 2020 offers complete education from real experts. The final key to success is long-term support. Find out about the only weight loss program that has it all at 2020lifestyles.com. Available in Bellevue and Seattle.
Take a swing at big cash this April at Quill's Cedar Creek Casino. Win your share of up to $45,000 with 7 players pocketing their share every single Tuesday. Play the $30,000 Picnic of Prizes kiosk game every week to win cash and free play. Just earn 250 points every Thursday and swipe your card at the kiosk to grab your share. Find all the details at QCCCasino.com.
Welcome back to Seattle Kitchen. Thanks for hanging with us, what I assume, for all 2 luxurious hours of this fine cooking show. I'm Katie O.
And I'm Terry Rotiro, the chef in the hat.
And it is time for Food for Thought Taste You Trivia. Unfortunately, Tom Douglas is not here to join us, so...
So we can take from him.
Yes, exactly. We're going to take everything from his his restaurants and give it away. But also, we're joined still here by Rachel Bell. Thanks for sticking around, Rachel.
Hey, sure.
So, Rachel, you've taken this quiz before.
I have.
Okay, so you know how it works. Each of us are going to have, because I'm playing today as well, 5 questions. Whoever gets the most correct wins, and whoever gets the least amount correct loses. Tina, our beautiful producer, will be administering the quiz today.
Most certainly will be, but here's the thing. You guys are playing for somebody who loves our show very, very much. Her name is Kate Severson. Should you happen to lose this quiz, you got to give her something. So everyone's going to pony something up to the table. Chef Terry Rotiro, should you lose today, what will you be giving?
I think I'm going to give again the brunch for 2 at Luke. As Tom would say, that's new.
That's new.
Well, it's a lovely gift.
I think it's a nice little gift on a Saturday or Sunday. Go to brunch at Luke.
Yep. And Miss Katie O, what will you give away today?
Let's see. You know, I was lucky enough to sneak into the Cinerama for one of the last showings of Black Panther. And before going, I had a delicious dinner at Tanaka-san.
Nice.
Some crispy wings, a little sake slushy.
Mm,
so
sake.
I'm going to give away a happy hour for two at Tanaka-san, valued at 75 smackers.
Nice. Now, Rachel, we just threw you into this mix. So
yes.
And you're sitting in for Tom. So you can just give something of Tom's away.
Like
do you have a suggestion?
I have an idea. So we had Stan and Nikki on earlier. They were promoting their Stranger Things at Cuoco dinner, which includes like all this really cool wine, all these really interesting pastas. So, Rachel,
interesting pasta.
Cool and interesting. Totally, right? Swipe right on that one.
Mm.
But we're going to give away two spots to that dinner that's happening on April 20th. That's a value of $150.
That's fun.
Everyone's rooting for you to lose.
So,
now.
You better lose, Rachel.
Okay.
All right, who would like to go first?
Me.
All right, Rach. What spice gives American-style mustard its yellow color?
What spice? I thought it was literally the mustard flour. Okay.
You're going to learn something now.
All right. I'm going to go with annatto.
Yeepa.
That is so fun, but it's not the correct answer.
Oh.
But annatto is a good word.
Turmeric?
Thank you.
Is it
yellow?
It's turmeric.
Oh, turmeric. Okay.
That's a tough one, though.
Shouldn't have been such an eager beaver to go first.
Annatto was a good bet, though. That would work in most cases.
Yeah, it's yellow, right?
Exactly.
Rachel, which grain is grown in a higher quantity worldwide, rice or wheat?
Going rice. I'm hoping to lose.
No, I like it. Rice is the answer.
Yay, the price is rice.
What is the ingredient in soufflés that makes them rise?
Baking powder.
No. Audience?
Egg whites.
Oh, man.
Which nut is grown in higher quantity worldwide, the almond or the walnut?
Did you say almond or walnut?
I sure did.
Almond.
Correct.
Yes.
I went to school in Chico in Northern California, and they call them almonds. They say when you shake the tree, the L falls out. Isn't that adorable? Next
that is
question.
Cute. That's cute.
True or false, white chocolate has no chocolate liquor in it at
true.
All.
True, and I hate white chocolate.
Yes.
That is true.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you hate it. Rachel, that was a fine showing. 3 out of 5. That is more
very
correct
solid.
than
it's
incorrect.
An okay showing.
Yeah.
Thanks for the confidence boost, though.
That was great.
I'm impressed.
I'm here for you. Chef Terry, are you ready?
I am very ready, and a big challenge here.
All right, Chef. 3 is the number for you to beat today. Which is not a mollusk? Abalone, scallop, or shrimp?
Shrimp.
Correct. Chef, which country is credited with the invention of the modern bread machine? Is that Italy, France, or Japan?
The modern what?
Bread machine.
I'm going to go with Japan.
You are correct.
Mm.
Nice.
This is on the odd ball in there, and I'm like, that's got to be the answer.
What is the name of the process in which chocolate is melted, cooled, and reheated to make it more malleable?
Tempered chocolate.
Yes, tempering. Yeah. Very good. Wow, Chef, that's 3 out of 3.
Rachel, we're
just
right there.
That's
where
right.
We need to be,
tied
right?
With
now
Rachel
I need to lose
now.
Both of the others.
What seafood is the star in the hors d'oeuvre known as Angels on Horseback?
Oysters.
Correct. 4 out of 4. Chef, let's go for 5. What 3 vegetables plus herbs are found in a traditional mirepoix?
Mirepoix, it's a French traditional.
That's what I said.
Onion, carrot, celery, bay leaf, and thyme.
Yeah, I feel like you get extra points for that. 5 out of 5 for Chef Terry.
Oh,
nice.
Wow.
All right, Katie. All you got to do is get more than 3 to beat Rachel over here, and you will not have to give anything away.
And more than 5 to beat me.
Yeah, not possible.
All right, Katie, which type of cream is more difficult to whip, homogenized or unhomogenized?
Oh, interesting. I've never even thought about it. I'm going to say homogenized.
Correct.
Yes.
Nice.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
That was good. There was a 50-50 and she got the right
confidently
50.
Homogenized. Katie, which country is credited with first practicing the art of noodle making? Is that Italy or China?
I'm going to give it to the Chinese.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Done. 2 out of 2.
They've been around for a real long time. China.
Katie, what is the Hawaiian name for albacore tuna? Ahi, Toro, or Tombo?
Is it ahi?
The answer is a tumble.
Yes. Welcome to the loser's table.
I know. I got to go to Hawaii more often.
Katie, you will need to get two more correct in order not to tie with Rachel.
Okay.
Make Rachel the loser, our guest over here.
I don't want to do that, though.
Let's not do that. She's rude. No loser.
That's rude.
I'm here to be mocked.
Which fish is highest in beneficial omega-3 fatty acids, trout, eel, or salmon?
Salmon.
The answer is trout.
Welcome to my world. Do we get to battle for the biggest loser?
I leave. I'm leaving.
And you know what I like? Okay. You pulled out a ton.
No, I actually might just lose, and then you're the
Can
winner.
Can we do a tie-breaking question?
Katie,
if I like you haven't got a tie yet. She's got to get this one right.
Oh. Yeah, I got to get this right. Otherwise, I lose.
Katie, which member of the succulent family is poisonous when eaten raw, but can be refined for use as a sugar substitute?
Agave?
Which member of, yes, agave is correct.
Well, oh, that's good.
So you guys have, we have a tie here between Katie and Rachel. Thierry, what do we do to break a tie?
Well, I'm going to watch both of your hands, and the first one that slaps the counter gets to answer the question. Now remember, if you slap the counter and you don't know the answer, you're a loser.
Loser. All right, you two.
When this show takes such a negative turn.
Which kind of beef has more marbling, grain-fed beef or grass-fed beef?
That was, I'm sorry.
That was Katie.
Katie.
Grain.
That's right. The answer.
That is correct.
Rachel, you are a delightful guest here at Seattle
A delightful
Kitchen.
Loser.
However, you're a loser.
Well, that means that old Kate gets my prize, right?
Yes.
That's right. She gets two spots at the Cuoco Stranger Things dinner. I'm guessing she's pretty thankful. It's going to be a really, really delicious time on April 20th.
Which is Hitler's birthday. Fun fact, that's true. Sorry, just bring facts to the show.
You've been listening to Seattle Kitchen and
Rachel. Let's go to break.
Thanks for coming, Rachel, and playing our game. You're listening to Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. This show is produced by Tina Knoll at Large Media. Our associate producer is Sarah Leibovitz, and our sound engineer is Sean, don't call me Del Torre. If you'd like to be part of our studio audience, go to Hot Stove Society. And buy tickets for only $15. Also, remember, if you miss any episode of Seattle Kitchen, you can subscribe to our podcast through Apple Podcasts or download the Cairo Radio app and search for Seattle Kitchen.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.